Blog Talk Radio.
Unbothered. 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 Impermeable. Unbothered. Impermeable. Unbothered. I'm the people's champ. Obama. And you don't understand. Melania. Permeable. Unbothered. Sick. Allergic to the con artist. Fake woke. An imposter. Only real ones up in my roster. Like Junior C. That's my roster. You know I just been bossed up. I've been high. My shit been bossed up. I've been high. My shit been
Happy Tuesday.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Just fancy.
There we go. I'm feeling good on this Tuesday. I know we've had a few sessions.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To get to this point.
Right. Well,
so
an interesting time.
Absolutely.
We're missing the birthday boy. I don't know where the birthday boy is. The birthday man.
He'll be on soon.
In action. Yeah.
He'll be on soon. Man, oh man. It's been
a
while. What, is it 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think it's been 3 weeks. I think it's been
time
flies. It's the birthday man.
Happy birthday.
Oh, fam. All right. Thank you so much.
That's the first thing we got to do is wish the man of the hour a happy birthday. It was yesterday, but we didn't have a show yesterday, so.
Well, we had a party yesterday.
Right, we did. Party over
yes.
here.
Yes. Oh, I had some of that cake, too. Ooh-wee.
Oh, man. I couldn't even finish it.
Wow.
I'm going to put my bid in. I would like vegan cake next time.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah. No more entertainment.
We'll get a vegan cupcake. We're going to have to find you a vegan cupcake because I don't know about the whole cake.
Something.
Well, we'll
something.
Definitely work something out.
Cake.
Maybe
yeah,
by next year, all of us will be there.
Oh.
We'll work it out. We'll work
oh.
it out. Because I've had cupcakes.
You gotta find you a slice or something.
Well, you know, in New York, that place downtown on 100 and I think 13th Street and I think it's St. Nicholas Avenue, you know, seasoned vegan. They have an array of vegan and vegetarian cupcakes and slices that you
oh.
wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Oh, I didn't even know. I've had it from somewhere, and it tastes exactly the same, but it's so much better for you.
You have some cupcakes.
There's
yeah,
so
cupcakes.
Many things that you can do. But no matter how you look at it, if it's sweet, it's still going to mess, no matter what. It's just not
and
as bad.
And if it's processed, even if it's vegan, if it's processed, that is... Sometimes processed vegan food is worse than if you eat something that's like a whole food, like doesn't have a lot of
but,
ingredients.
Yeah.
So,
but you know something,
it tastes
good.
Around. Moderation, right?
And
I can't even have like eggs, milk, and cheese anymore. I can't have dairy. My stomach
yep.
can't
most
take
people,
it.
Yeah.
No.
Most people can't have it even if they have it on a regular basis. So if you don't
yeah,
have it, you have it. It's just bad.
A lot of people are lactose intolerant.
Most humans, because that's baby food. That's baby cow food. It's not food. It's not anything for us.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
people, like after I did my detox, I've never been the same. Even though I've gone back to eating some not good things, I've never been able to eat them, and I didn't have a bad experience. Like normally I'll eat it because I enjoy it, and then suffer not as bad. Like as you would because you're doing it right now, but my body's like, come on, you're doing so good. What happened?
No, it's definitely a transition. It's definitely, you know, not for the faint at heart.
Right. Oh, behavior modification.
Yeah. Yeah, but,
behavior modification.
You know, once you stop, you know, altogether, your body immediately is like, oh, no, 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 you don't. No, you don't.
what are you doing? What is this?
It's an immediate regret. I sit there, I'm like, this is going to be okay. I'm only going to have a little bite. Oh, no, no,
nope.
No.
Nope. But that's how you know you should eat it. Because if you don't eat vegetables, for a month and then you eat it, you don't get sick if you eat vegetables. But if you don't eat meat or dairy for a month and you eat it, you'll get sick. So that's how you know you shouldn't be eating it. I'm a hypocrite because I eat it. And most of the time, if you don't eat vegetables, you'll get sick. But if you don't eat meat, you'll be less sick.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It shows what you're supposed to and what you're not supposed to have.
Yeah, and I don't eat meat or chicken. I don't eat, like, beef, pork, chicken. The only thing I have is seafood, which is not any better because probably worse because all of the garbage that's on Earth, humans don't want anymore, so they dump it in the ocean. So it's probably worse to eat seafood only, but, you know, you got to give things up one at a time if you want to. If you want to do it, like Daddy says, in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea of fasting. Also, it's the idea of fasting.
Oh, yeah.
You can put those things in your body. It's not good. I've been following Sabi, as y'all know, since 1988, but I still eat things that are not on his list and Sister Ma'at's list. I still do, but I always purge. I always fast in some way, one way or another.
Yep.
And as long as you get
important.
Rid of what
that's
you put
really
in,
important.
Replenish your body with the nutrients it needs, you're at least fighting the battle of toxicity.
Yeah, but I'll tell you one thing.
And that's important.
When you do it that way, you're going to feel it all the way, coming all the way out. No joke. No fun.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
That's it. Well, once you get a sense of your body and you know what your body can do, there are things that you can begin to indulge in. And, you know, moderation, you know, like we're talking 1988. I've learned how to somewhat do what I got to do. You know, I followed their regimen very strictly in the beginning. And as I grew, I learned, and there were things that I could eat as long as I purged, and just things that you can do.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's true. It's true. It's all good. One way or another, however you decide to you know, do your daily situations and, you know, what you decide to eat and everything.
Well, speaking of purging.
We're about to purge
out the White House,
huh?
Your body. I don't know. Because apparently there's more than three, but apparently there's a third major party. Apparently, we have a new thing called Trump Republicans. I was so disturbed. I saw a video the other day. Who showed it? Did you send it? Somebody sent it. I think either you or mommy had sent it. And it was about the Million MAGA March. And I'm like, y'all can't even come up with your own name. Like, you literally stole the name of the Million Man March and turned it into a march about Donald Trump, who is despicable. Like, you call
it
the Million MAGA March? That's so, I'm more disturbed by the name than anything else. Like, that has, I can't get over it. I can't let go. The name
I'm not
really,
surprised. I'm surprised.
Really,
you're surprised.
I get surprised every time. I just,
Let me just give you just my mother, your grandmother, had a very serious problem with certain things as related to the enslavement of African people. And one of them was, how could you, being people of European descent, so have such disdain, disregard, and disrespect for African people, yet you will allow your babies to nurse at the black queen's
right.
breast.
Right.
Now,
I use that example.
Well, I only use that example to talk about the Million MAGA March. Western civilization, white folk, don't have anything. They have been stealing our legacy. It's in front of you, past and present. And it will be that way
in
the future. They don't have, they need. So they steal other people. That's what I meant when I said the only thing they invented was the patent office. That's what I meant.
That's why I said somebody said that in hidden colors. That's
my
why
favorite.
I said that.
Now, the other thing
I
want.
Like that,
the
no,
only
okay,
other
I
thing
like
I want to add
like
to that.
And clapped when you said that.
It was a very interesting concept because we all know it's true.
Yes.
What made them clap,
yes,
what made them
exactly.
laugh, the humor in it, they know it's true. The other thing is,
yes.
look at First Lady Melania Trump. When she almost
who
word for word
speech?
Copied.
Oh,
exactly.
Oh, God.
They don't have.
Oh,
you
God.
See, we have to come to understand who we are as a people. See, I think one of the problems that we have is we don't really understand who we are. We don't
that's
understand
true.
What we put. And the psychology of making us feel inferior has been so strong in everything about us that we view ourselves as inferior when we are
yeah.
the ones that are actually fueling the society itself. It's
that's
right here for us all to see.
Yeah. Whoa.
It's here for us all to see.
Whoa.
So I just think that we all just need to get ourselves together, move beyond this. Now we have breathing space. We can exhale. That's what Terry McMillan meant when she said waiting to exhale.
I feel a way. I was just thinking, I didn't think about it until like right now about even giving this topic life. But I think that it's something important that we have to acknowledge because it's turned into a cult and it's very disturbing. And there's even like there's all sorts of things that have women for Trump, blacks for Trump, like gays for Trump. Like there's so many things that have come out of him. And it's, what is it? And I know what you're going to say, Daddy, but what is it about him that made people turn him into an icon for them in a way that black people didn't even turn President Obama into an icon the way people have turned Trump into an icon?
Family, I believe that Donald Trump's primal sense of hate in human beings, and that is a passion. It's extremely seductive. And it's an addiction. It can draw you down. And his hateful personality, the way he hated, he opened up the portal of hell for people to be able to vibrate on that feeling. You know when you're feeling really bad, like low and down, things ain't going for you, and you start thinking and you start, my mother used to call it, that you're dwelling in the pit. You're down there and you're moping. Things ain't going right for you. You're all
listen
up,
to sad music.
Yeah, there we go. You got what I'm saying. Exactly that. And you start thinking more of the negative things and the negative things, and you start falling into the pit. Well, that applies to human beings. And what Donald Trump did, particularly with white people and white men in particular, is he allowed them to go deep into their primal fear, and he played on that. And the reason why is he is so susceptible himself to inferiority and insecurity. And I say to us, use him as an example of white people, period. That's who they are. And he was an example. He became a poster child for the white ethnic stock. But guess what? He lost. He lost.
They don't believe it, though.
No, but we know it for a fact. They don't believe a lot of things. We don't judge our believability upon what they believe. Because, family, you can't get no loonier than Toon than them. They Looney Tune. And I spend all my day and night staying out of their rabbit hole. Don't go in their rabbit hole. Don't go there because it will only make you insane because you'll be wondering, why am I thinking like this? Unfortunately, when they gave out the Kool-Aid, there's some people of African descent
that took it.
That said, I'm thirsty. I am relieved in so many different ways, but please don't think Biden is going to save you. Please don't think that.
Hello.
Please don't. Please don't. There's only one person. I'm going to tell you all who's going to save you. I'm going to tell you who's going to save you. And, in fact, I'm going to tell you how you can go see that person that's going to save you. And that's the only person that's going to save you. Go to the bathroom and look in the mirror. That's who's going to save you.
That's it.
And the other thing is if you ever want to know who to vote for, just ask a sister. Ask an African-American woman, how you rolling with the vote? And wherever she says she's going, I'm with you. Not all of them. But there were enough that made a statement. I never speak in absolute.
That's true.
I never speak across the board. The hero of this election. But also it's important to clarify. So it's important because I'm not talking about all. Just like I'm saying all men. Okay. Even though they said that a lot of brothers, you know what? A lot, 80%, 85% of brothers understood what to do, and we all got together and we did it. That's another thing that we need to talk about. Exactly what was the coalition between African-American men and women that made this election work? Because that's what happened. Here it is.
Yeah.
One night, Joe Biden is losing. He's on his way out. And then down in South Carolina, James Clyburn gave a speech, and it changed the structure of the thought of voting. After that, the sisters from South Carolina, they got themselves together. Well,
and
that's
Stacey
Georgia.
Abrams, too.
Well, that's Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Now, that's another
people.
Story.
Oh, okay.
She's another hero. But the original hero that saved Joe Biden was James Clyburn and the sisters of South Carolina and the brothers. And the brothers, but I'm talking about what the sisters. But see, we have to know that sisters are organizers. They are sisters.
Historically,
the human family. I'm talking about historically going back in time. The feminine energy, the black woman shapes the society. The men or the male energy inspires the society through inspiration and shaping and forming who you are. That's what built the pyramids and the temples and the civilizations of ancient Africa and China and all around the world where black people went. That is something that sisters, but why it would make sense that sisters would be the ones to do it, because it is upon your shoulders that we build our homes. And if we build our homes on your shoulders, it only makes sense we should build our nation on your shoulders. As it relates to your organizing skills and your insight, I'm a very proud male brother. I'm black and I'm proud. I'm a man. But I recognize the power of the black woman. And I think that's what's always made me strong, was I realized how strong the black woman is. But let's not say strong like she can endure pain. I'm talking about strong, about enduring and resilience. And this is what the sisters did this year. Thank the sisters, and I thank the brothers, but I thank the sisters. because what they did, what Stacey – now, Stacey Abrams to this election was like George Washington Carver to World War II. She single-handedly mm-hmm. – now, she probably had a lot of help. I don't want to say it like that. But what Stacey Abrams did in Georgia, I'm so glad she didn't become governor. Because if she had become governor, she would not have been able to do what she did in this election. And this sister turned America around for the rest of its existence. This ain't the end. Stacey is a force. She's also a young sister in terms of age. She's got a lot of years to get much better at her genius. So, once again, I say, it's up to us now.
And what you say is so, because I was watching, you know, I couldn't stop watching just because I was so fascinated with how everything was going. And it was amazing to me that they knew that if they got the inner cities or what's considered to be the inner cities, they had the space. Pennsylvania was, Philadelphia decided Pennsylvania. Atlanta decided Georgia. Like, it was amazing to watch. They were taught, and they specifically mentioned the black vote in Atlanta and the black vote in Philadelphia and like in different places. If black people are a minority, if black people, why were black people the deciding vote from a lot of the states? It doesn't make sense when you really think about it. Like it's ingrained us to believe that we're minorities, whatever, blah blah blah. But when you consider that minorities is what made him win, it's amazing that we don't understand. It still amazes me that there's things that we don't get. But
it makes you understand that we are not a minority if we are representing
right
now the majority.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. But I get it because I understand human behavior. I understand the psychology of the way that the – like no matter how much you see it, and I was just talking to Haru about this earlier, no matter how much you see it, if there's something in you that doesn't believe it, it doesn't matter what you see. It matters what you believe. Unfortunate that it's that way, but like you said, Daddy, the only person that can save you from that is yourself. Nobody else can save you from the thought processes that you have. Nobody else can save us. Getting reparations is not going to save us from our mentality as black people. I'm not saying, and I, you know, that's a whole other conversation, but us getting it is not going to be what saves us. I'm not saying that we don't deserve it, but us getting it is not going to be what saves us. Us getting a special job is not going to, President Obama becoming the first black president, Kamala Harris becoming the first female black, you know, all these different things as vice president is not what's going to save your mentality. Individually, everybody's mentality has to change, and collectively, we have to believe that we're better than we're told that we are. And that's the only way that we're going to make it anywhere. Because it's nice that we won. But all the things that we were looking forward to in the summertime when the protests were happening, everything is radio silence now. So it really, like, it can't just be a moment of happiness. It literally has to be a change of the complete mindset of people. And if we're not willing to change the mindset, we're not willing to listen to people that we don't agree with, but we can still learn more about how we feel by listening to people that we don't agree with, if we're not willing to step outside the box that we put ourselves in, we're going to keep running on a hamster wheel and make it nowhere. And we're going to continue to be in the situation that we're in. So it doesn't matter who won. Like we said before, like when you said about Harriet Tubman, do you think Harriet Tubman was concerned about who was president when she was trying to get the freedom? Like these things are important, and I understand why they are significant. I understand why Biden winning was significant to a certain extent. But it's still, we have to do more than just say, oh, God, Biden's going to save the black community now because he has a plan and he's mentioning the word systemic racism. He's mentioning it. So now we think everything is going to get better. But if we don't put in the work, it's not going to get better. Nothing is going to change. It's going to go right back to we have the wool over our eyes and we think that the world is changing. And it's exactly how it was in 1865. It's not gonna get any better.
I was up late, as you know. I really shouldn't even say late. I operate at night.
Your normal time.
Yeah, I operate at night. And as I was doing my work and I was watching the results, one of the first things that came through that began to tell people, because up until that time, they were getting results here or there.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden, Milwaukee came in. Milwaukee is black for the most part. It also has other cultures too, but it is earmarked as black. When they started talking about those numbers, you see, we have to remember that that what they were saying, talking about a blue wall, and the blue wall were three states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and I'm trying to think of the other one. I'll think about that other one as time goes on. Well, what began to happen with Wisconsin, it started to break for Biden. That's when people started talking about Biden winning or Biden having a very good chance. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Oh, the other one was Michigan. Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. That was the blue wall that they were talking that they had to break down because that went Republican by just – that was the deciding factor in 2016, those three states. Hmm. They didn't go with them for much, but the black vote was absent in these three states.
Hmm.
So what I was watching – all of a sudden, here come Wisconsin, and then all of a sudden, here comes Clark County. I believe that's what it's called. That is Detroit, Michigan. Detroit went for Biden. Milwaukee went, and then all of a sudden, they started talking about Philadelphia.
Yep.
Black.
Yep. Yep. That's
but what
saying.
You're saying, Sasha... and Kandike, and even what I'm saying also, but I want to focus on what you're saying because you are the upcoming generation. Like, we have to understand where the answers are. You can talk all you want to about reparations. They can give every black person $1 million. But if you ain't got your head on tight, it don't make a difference what they
do. Exactly.
Because we did so much more with less than that.
Exactly.
And so we have got to come to this conclusion and understand whether Biden won or Trump won, even if President Obama had been given a third term, if Michelle Obama had been his vice president, it doesn't make a difference if we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. We are caught up in this story. I may have told this story before. Maybe there's some folks listening that didn't hear it last time. Dr. John Henry Clark used to always tell me the story about the toxic relationship, symbiotic in nature, the Messiah complex, and ego starvation.
Hmm.
He said the person that suffers from Messiah complex is the one that's always looking for the Savior outside of him or herself, always waiting for that Messiah to come to save them from all the problems of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the disorder of ego starvation. And that is the person who, in a sickening fashion, depends on the adoration of other people to complete his or her personhood. So she spends their life trying to convince the people suffering from Messiah complex, I am your Messiah. Vote for me and I'll set you free. It's a toxic relationship. It's an abusive relationship.
Yep.
Going back to your first comments, Sasha, about, you know, what would make people do what they do. It's a toxic relationship. Y'all know human behavior. You know social work. You've been around folks. They suffer. White folks suffer from a severe case of inferiority and insecurity. It comes out of an ice age mentality where you never knew what the next moment was going to give you. So you lived insecure and you were being pummeled by a force, the ice, far greater than yourself that you had no control over. The closest you came was learning how to build fires, staying in caves, putting on clothes. So when you think of that mentality, just sophisticate it. Make it a little bit more sophisticated. Take it out of its savage state. And that's white America. That's what white America is. It is sophisticated savagery. And as black folk, we better wake up and understand, if it is to be, it's up to me. And by me, I mean each and every one of us.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
That's it. If you can visualize it, you can actualize it, you can make it come to exist by your own will and your own power. But I do tell you one thing. I am so happy we got that Looney Tune out the White House. Because we're on the brink of war right now. Because of this man.
He's dangerous.
He's about to go into Iran and pull the troops out of Afghanistan. And he's doing it in order to leave Biden a headache. Because he ain't doing nothing in 60-something days. But what he's going to leave behind, you know, he may not finish out this term. They may pull the 25th Amendment on him. Because if they and a majority of the cabinet walk into the Oval Office and Mike Pence sits down and tells President Obama, President Trump, sir, your services are no longer wanted or needed.
You're fired.
You're fired.
All the iron.
Mommy said that. That's why I said it. She clapped. Candace, what you got to say?
I mean, it's just a very interesting time. I think that we definitely have to understand, you know, with this election shows something, shows that we come in numbers, and we have to get that confidence because, like you said, that physical slavery is abolished, quote unquote. That mental slavery is a hell of a thing that a lot of people grapple with and they don't even realize it. You know, the first thing to changing any sort of behavior or modifying or however you want to call it, you know, making changes in your life, the first thing is to recognize that you need to make a change. And a lot of people don't even realize that there are changes to be made, and we have to realize how amazing we are. Forget about anybody else. Forget about, you know, individuals who, you know, want to downplay us or tell us this or that. We can't listen to them because their words don't matter. A lot of what we deal with are, you know, the feelings that we carry, and we just got to get over that. Don't care what people say or think or do, and, you know, just continue to be who we are and, you know, own who we are. Understand that we're amazing. Understand that people look up to us. People, you know, they aspire to be us, and we don't even realize how amazing we are. And with this election, you know, we have to look and say and understand that we're here. We're present. We're making a difference. And we are just saying to hell with what other people have to say. It's our time now. This is our year. 2020 came through and made a whole bunch of changes in our lives, but take the best and leave the rest.
There we go.
You know, take the lessons that we've learned, take the experiences that we've experienced, and incorporate them into our lives and better ourselves. Because if we never have to deal with anything adverse or anything strenuous, we would just be living a mundane, quiet life. But it's the changes and things that happen throughout our lives that make us better people and grow us.
Tell me, Sasha, you watching Caress, your son, Christian.
Uh-huh.
My grandman child. people who are doing virtual learning, what do you think about that? Just observing it as a mother of a son, just had a birthday. Happy birthday to my man.
Oh, yeah. Nine.
What would you say
it
to
is.
Parents?
Not
that just in
not
terms of the challenges, but also what – do you see anything good coming from virtual learning?
I do not – I feel like if virtual learning was happening in school, it would be better. But because it's only virtual – some people are doing both. We chose to have Christian stay home and do 100% remote learning because we did not feel that it was safe. Because some people, you know, some people don't have a choice. Some people have a choice and prefer their kids be in school because they drive them crazy. And some people, you know, for whatever reason, some kids are in school and some kids are not. No matter how crazy me and Christian drive each other, I still would prefer him to be home at the current time because of what's going on. But I honestly do not feel like there is anything – I don't even know how to answer the question correctly because I think that virtual learning is horrible because of the socialization or the lack thereof socialization in the schools. I don't think that it's healthy for children to – first of all, there are some kids that go through situations in the home that are completely unfortunate, and school is the only thing that gave them any type of solace from what they went through at home. Even if they're not getting beat, there might be some, like, not getting beat, not getting abused, but it's still, maybe they're going through something emotionally with themselves. Maybe they're figuring things out about themselves that make them uncomfortable at home. Being in school for a lot of teenagers, even if they have a great experience at home, being in school, a lot of times for teenagers, is what saves them. So I really think that virtual learning is a hindrance for the natural progression of adolescents. And that is my opinion. I don't think that it's good for kids to not be in school with each other, to not be with their friends. I don't like it at all. But I will say that for right now, because of what we're going through is so new and we don't know, we don't understand it, we have to keep in the front of our mind that this is not forever. What keeps me going when it comes to the concept of him being in virtual learning 100% is that it's not going to be forever, and that once he gets back in school, he can really appreciate, you know, he can really appreciate it, because sometimes it's hard to appreciate something if you have it all the time. But when you lose it and then you get it back, you might have a better understanding and appreciation of it. So that, I think, that no matter how bad it may seem, because I really don't feel like virtual learning is healthy for children at all. But I want him to be able to be here in the physical form and the rest of the family to be here in the physical form for him to enjoy school later on. So I feel like it's important to sacrifice what we might want to do now so that in the future we can continue to do it. Because you can't – if we do something, because, you know, on a whim, and then something happens, you can never take it back, no matter what. No matter how much fun,
no matter how much you learned, no matter how much you were around your friends in school, you can't take it back if something happens. It's not something that you can, you know, there's not a 7-day return policy on COVID. Like, that's something that, whether you believe it's real or not, we have no idea what it's going to do and what it's doing and what the next steps are. Like, we have no idea. So when you ask the question of that, as much as I think virtual learning is a horrible thing, I do not like it. His teacher is so nice. But I wish that she could be his teacher in the physical form because she's such a nice person. I like her a lot. I love the way that she talks to children, even the children that are not doing the greatest of things. I love how she interacts with children. But I don't think that it is conducive for learning, especially for kids that have trouble sitting still. Because, you know, Dad, you know, when you have kids that have trouble sitting still, you would go and ask them, you know, hand this paper out or go do this for me. Or, you know, you would ask them to do something. But if you have a kid that can't sit still and they can sit in front of a computer for all those hours, it's not healthy and it's not conducive for learning. But it is something that we have to do. I really am excited by the fact that one day this is going to be over, no matter how long it takes. One day this is going to be over, and I'm going to get to experience the things that I used to experience, and I'm going to get to experience things that I've never experienced before that I no longer want to take advantage of. So I think that that is the most positivity that I can get out of the concept of virtual learning, even my virtual working from home. It's an experience, and I'm fortunate that I am having this experience because I know that there are frontline workers and there's other workers that have to be out there and don't have a choice, but everybody's handling it differently. So just because, you know, you're home, if you're not good at sitting in your house all day, you're losing it. I don't want to say it's as bad as being out there with people that have it, but it's still mentally challenging for everybody. So I think in answering your question, I really feel like it's so important to be excited about what's going to happen in the future once kids are back in school and once we can go out and do things and think of all the things that you're going to do, because I never want to take traveling, and I want to be like my sister when I grow up with the traveling.
No,
like, I want to, my sister that, you know, I'm talking about you. I want to experience life in its entirety, and not, you know, in 4 years, I'll never be in my 30s again. I'll never have the opportunity to be in my 20s again. Like, there's things that you're never going to get to experience ever again in life, and I really think that this year has done a great job in showing you that things can be taken away from you in 2 seconds. Like, things can be taken away from you. People can be taken away from you. Your ability to do certain things can be taken away from you. Like, you have to be able to do what you need, what you want to do, and I think that that is really the only thing that I can get the positive out of the virtual learning, is that I'm excited about not taking advantage of the future and, you know, what we have to look forward to.
You know, I am learning about virtual learning through Caress.
Yeah.
our Thursday meetings, he's teaching me. I'm watching his dexterity. I'm watching his ability to move and groove on this new
that is true.
Thing. Now, here's where I see the advantage. This is all pedagogical. This is all education. And it deals with testing. I have, in my career, I did test-taking operation. I've worked with some of the companies that do it. Sylvan, I've worked with directly. Kaplan's, I've work with, but not like I did with Sylvan's that was in the building where I was the administrator. But the one thing that I've learned about what we're doing is there is a skill to taking a standardized test.
That's
you
true.
Have your booklet. Do you right or left-handed, you have a booklet that you read from, and then you have an answer grid that you respond to. Your ability to answer the correct answer the question correctly has nothing to do with you knowing the information. It has to do with your dexterity to be able to read on one side and then respond by filling in a bubble on another. That is a skill. That is a skill. And a lot of folk may not realize that. Everybody's trying to get you to learn the material so you can answer it correctly, but the method by which you're answering the question is a skill in itself. And so we spend so much of our time trying to teach the children how to read, we don't sometimes teach them the skill that allows you to take what you know, retain it between when you read it on the booklet, be able to retain it, know the right answer, and then to be able to, with dexterity, fill in A, B, C, or D. That's a skill.
That's true.
And what I'm learning about virtual learning is if we could sidestep the knowledge and wisdom that it takes to do virtual learning into test taking, our children would max out on the test.
That's true.
And so when I'm looking at this, and I marvel at Caress, and I would also marvel at all the other children who are doing virtual learning, because they have, and much prop to the teachers that have had to adapt also, we've had to adapt to a whole nother way.
Yeah.
That really, it pushed everything forward into the future, even though we weren't there. Because now look at all of the colleges where you can get your degree online. Look at the work that is being done around the world as it relates to virtual conferences. The other night, I was watching that award show, The People's Choice. In fact, I think it was yesterday. And, like, when Demi Lovato, she was the hostess, and when she came out, there were screens, like about, I don't know how many, 100, 150 screens of people.
Oh, my God.
That was the audience.
Wow.
Now, look at what happens now in football games if they decide to build in those types of television receptors. Think of what happens in concerts if they built in those types of monitors into the wall. Think of all of the people that could not have gone to a concert that now can go to a concert. Virtual learning has pushed us into the future.
Absolutely.
But
I mean, even
know
jobs.
Feeling. But that feeling that you get from going to a concert, you cannot get that from your living room.
Suppose you don't have the physical ability to go to concerts, at least it can give you.
See, it's opened up another portal. There's nothing like the real thing. There's nothing like human to human contact. That's agreed upon. But as it relates to the future, this pandemic, 2020, has opened up our eyes, and necessity is the mother of invention. We will never go back to the way we were. Forget about everybody saying, I want to be normal. Forget it. Normal is what got us in trouble. I don't want to be normal. But what I want us to do is to look at the positive aspects of what has happened. Let's say that there's a special event happening in another part of the world that you really want to go to, but you can't. Imagine being able to tune into that now for a price far less than it would have cost if you had to go there. Airfare, hotel, food. You could sit up there with your own food. You could grub hub it and experience something that you would never have been able to experience had this pandemic not pushed us.
Yeah.
2020. Mm-hmm. This was, nature has it so that nature will make you do what she wants you to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of innocent people that have had to pay the price for this. And mm-hmm. I'm not unaware of that. I'm totally sensitive to that. And I extend my regards and whatever feelings that I could to anyone who has had pain because of what has happened in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But I swear to you, family, for your generation, this is such a phenomenal time to pick your bags up, look to the older generation and say, I'm sorry, I can't go the way you've been going. We have to make a change. If we are to, I'm talking about white children too. If we are to survive, not just as an America, but as a world, if we are to survive, and you know something, folk may not like this, but we couldn't have gone through this with Trump, without Trump. Trump has been a
That's
very
true.
Important. You know, I'll tell you something. Judas.
Yeah.
I've often said
yep.
the hero of Christianity is not Christ. It's Judas.
Mm-hmm.
The hero of Christianity. Because if Judas hadn't betrayed Jesus.
Ooh,
say
Lord.
Again.
You're going to trigger some people.
But,
I said, you're going to trigger some people.
But just think of the story. If Christ had not been betrayed, if he had not been crucified, I'm talking about the story. I'm not talking about the religion. I'm talking about the way the story go. The story go that Jesus Christ was betrayed by his best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The one that was the closest to him. The brother that he built his church on. Peter said, he said, Lord, is there anything I can do for you? As they were taking him away. The Romans were taking Christ away. And now Peter want to do something. And Jesus said, look, he said, before the cock crowed three times, which is like 6 o'clock in the morning, before the cock crowed three times, you will deny that you even know me. And Peter, which is really Ptah in Egypt, Peter, the rock, the hill, is what Christ built his church on. Peter is the rock that the Christian church is built on, not Christ, because I got my Bible study in place. These people can't argue with me. I know what they said in those books, and I understand the story. And the hero of Christianity is Judas, because had he not betrayed, and the same thing goes with this. If it hadn't been for Trump, we wouldn't be here. As horrible as it's been,
right?
As painful as it's been, as frightening as it's been, what don't kill you make you stronger. Donald Trump's absolute incompetence was what was necessary for us to experience 2020 the way we did.
Yeah.
Because God
to,
knows
to
we can't
change.
Say we didn't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes you got to get to this point for us
That's
to say,
it.
You know, it's time to make some changes.
That's it.
We're tired.
Richard Pryor was in a movie called Which Way Is Up? And at the end of the movie... You know, at the end of the movie, Richard Pryor lost everything. This was a brilliant movie. I mean, it was really very powerful. He lost everything. He lost his wife, his family, his children, his job, his dignity, his respect, everything. And at the end, the European male that's in, like the head boss, he rolls down the window and he says to Richard Pryor's character, he says, how does it feel to be at the bottom? He said, and Richard Pryor looked at him and said, it feels pretty good because the only way to go is up.
That's right.
That's where we are now. That's where we are now. We down so low, the only way to go is up. And the question is, are we going to do it? And to your generation, Kandike and to Sasha, this is what excites me about these conversations that we have, because it gives me a chance to just, you know, be part of this generation's future. My question is to you, what are you going to do? What are you going to do as a social worker, as a human behavioralist, as a banker, as a mother, what are you going to do? What is your generation going to do? Don't depend on the older generation. My generation screwed things up. And the generation that's just above me, but where, give or take, I'm in within that generation. They done messed up. They should be ashamed of themselves. That's why I carry the mirror with me everywhere I go. So when they say what's wrong with the young people, I give them the mirror and say, check it out.
But you also use the mirror to look at yourself and, you know, kiss yourself.
Yeah, I can't help it. Gotta jump back and gotta kiss myself. You have a choice. You have a choice.
Hold yourself accountable.
And
no, it's true.
That, hey,
going back
accountable,
to what you're saying.
Accountability is two words, not one.
Mm-hmm.
It's your ability to account
mm-hmm.
for who and what you are.
Mm-hmm.
Responsibility
mm-hmm.
is two words. It's the response to your ability.
Mm.
And your generation, I believe, is understanding it. When I look at the high schoolers, and when I look at the college students, and when I look at your generation, what a powerful group of people coming through. And what a wonderful example we have been for you never to want to be the way we turned out.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know what you don't never want to be, look at the older generation. You don't ever want to be liars and cheaters and thieves and tolerators of people that do. You don't tolerate that. No. The police, no. I'm talking to the good police. All those police that everybody say are so good, I'm talking to you. The reason why the bad police can do what they do is because you're quiet. Nobody counts. If you're so proud to be the security force of the community, that you are in service to the community, you don't want bad people around you. I got in trouble as an educator frequently, particularly with the union, because I had no mercy on teachers that I did not believe that loved the children, that wanted the best for the children, and I would be very plain with them. You need to find another job.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously you were not born to be a teacher.
But you know what's so crazy is that there's very few people that will speak up because they want to keep their job.
Yep.
They're excited, and there's such a camaraderie with being bad and getting away with being bad and, you know, not speaking up and not doing what you're supposed to do. Even in my field, there's individuals who are social workers, but they are causing more issues than they're solving.
Yep.
And you just gotta call people out. And I think, you know, I get that from you, Daddy. It's your fault. I'm going to put the blame on you. But
I'm guilty.
Oh, I definitely do too.
When you see something, you got to say something, because if not, you are basically giving up your morals and ethics just to be and hold that title and, you know, be amongst people that are just horrible to begin with, that you don't even want to be around. So it's like you got to hold true to yourself. You got to be yourself. You got to understand that being good, you got to be able to look in the mirror at the end of the day. You have to be able to appreciate who you are as an individual. And these are the choices that you're making throughout the day. Anybody can be bad. It's easy to be bad. It's hard to be good. And that's a shame.
I understand. You know, like going with what you're saying, Kandike, that's what Martin Luther King used to quote Dante's Inferno. And he said the hottest part of hell is reserved for those who knew better but stood by and watched and said nothing. The hottest part of hell isn't even for the person that did it. It's for the people that knew better and did nothing. I have a conscience. It's a very interesting type of conscience. It doesn't allow me peace sometimes. And it gets on me so bad, I'd rather get into the good trouble that I get into. Thank you, John Lewis. Good trouble. I'd rather get into good trouble by speaking up than to have to listen to that voice in my head that reminds me that's a little cowardly for you to let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't live with that voice in my head. I'd rather live with the voice from the outside that's attacking me for saying or doing what I did than to deal with that internal voice that haunts me. And I've learned that in life. And I think that's what John Lewis represented. There are folk that don't agree with his manner, and I understand that. But guess what? John Lewis made a choice, and he was successful in his choice. He was willing to get beat over the head. Okay, he was willing to sacrifice himself. There are other black folks that say, well, I wouldn't do that. No, you wouldn't. Don't even start. That's what you say. That sound good. But if you grew up in the South, I was born in that, not in that South. I was born in the North, but I grew up at that time where if somebody got on the bus and said to me, Nick, N-word, get to the back of the bus, I would have gotten up and got to the back of the bus until the time was right that I didn't. I'm not speaking about me personally. I'm speaking about what our brothers and sisters endured. My father being from Alabama, your grandfather, Booker T. Senior, he used to tell stories about Northerners that would come down south. And he told this one story about this Northerner that came down south and was admonishing the African-Americans that basically were going along with white supremacy. There were certain things going on in this community, and they just, you know, they stepped off the sidewalk when the white man passed. You know, that's what they have to do. You have to step off the curb. You have to step into the curb when a white man or white woman was passing you in the street. I'm talking about in my lifetime. I'm not talking about years ago. I'm talking about in my lifetime. When my father was a young man, if there was a white man, now there were some black folk didn't do that. They knocked the white man into the curb themselves. There was some that did that. That was true. But for the most part, the law was, and never look in their eyes. You were not allowed to look in white people's eyes. Mm. Okay? That story that my father told me. And he told me a story about a brother that came down to Alabama, and he was telling the black folk, man, you a bunch of cowards. You let them do that to you, man, let me tell you something. If they ever tried that, okay, long story short, they didn't see that man for a while until they found his body. That was on the river's edge. The point I'm making is that up here in the North, we acted like, oh, that's down south. Some of the most viral, vicious racists are in New York and Chicago.
Newberg.
Okay.
Who was it? The leader of the KKK lived in Newberg.
Okay. Mm. All right. So that's what we're dealing with here. So it takes a common sense for your generation. See, that's over now, family. For you, for your generation, that's over. That's laughable now. People are laughing at this nonsense now, although it's very dangerous. It's no longer part and parcel of what's accepted. Your generation has a phenomenal opportunity to be able to make the necessary changes in this society for Caress and for Caress's children and grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is now your opportunity, and every generation that has preceded you has helped get us to this point. Everybody has been part of this, as slow as it's been. Every generation. Had there not been, for those that may not know, Stephen Fetchit, he was a comedian, used to scratch his head and say, yes, the master, yes, the boss, ours are coming, ours are coming. And then you had the ones with the wide eyes looking at you, yes, the master, I'm a coming. Well, I don't know how we going to do this, Amasa. You the one with the brain, Amasa.
Oh, my God.
Okay, step and fetch it. But guess what? There would be no Kevin Hart if there wasn't a step and fetch it.
Mm-hmm.
Step and fetch it made it possible. As much as he may have gone through, he made it possible for Kevin Hart and for Tommy Davidson and for all of the comedians, those that came before us were the path builders. There were no roads. They built the path. And now your generation has the ability to appreciate that and respect that and honor Stephen Fetchett, honor all those that had to do all those horrible things. But they made it possible to make it possible. And we can't forget that. And we have to respect that and build on them. Build on them. It is the Oscar Robertsons and the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, and it's the Muhammad Ali's. There would be no Mayweather if it wasn't for Muhammad Ali. There would be no Muhammad Ali without Jack Johnson. And one day what I want in education, it'll be there. What I want to see happen in schools will happen. May not be my generation. I may not be here to experience. But I know if I just keep on keeping on, because I know that I am who I am because of John Henry Clark and because of Sharshi McIntyre. And because of Jeannie Bain. I am who I am because they were on the road before me and they helped me on the road. And there are other educators out there that reach out to my work and support the work that I'm doing. They will now continue the path. And the same goes for you, Kondike. We need people who will talk. We need counseling as a black people. As a human behavioralist, and as a banker, Sasha, we need to become smart in money. We have to know what money is. We have to know the illusion that it is, but the reality that it can create. That's what we have to know. That's what we have to build on. And your generation has an opportunity now to do that, and I say, go ahead with your bad self. You got it. This is yours now. I done run the race. They're passing the baton to you to continue the relay race. You got it in your hand. What you gonna do? I could almost make a song about that.
And it's not what you were saying, but I have a song that goes perfect with everything that you were saying today that we can round out
there
the
we
show
go.
With.
There we go. All right. I'm ready to hear it. Go ahead.
All right. Hotep, have a great week, everybody.
Hotep
family.
In the league, who you wanna be? I'm who they wanna be. B-E-A-U-T-Y-E. Never seen so much rage from a queen. Rage from a queen. Queen so strong, thought she was a machine. Girl of your dreams, Sinclair Regine. Turn to the max, can't forget Maxine.
But fun to be as a goddess inside of being modest. 100 degrees the hottest. If we're being honest, ebony anybody. Next, people win, they say we're being demonic. Angel in disguise, I hate to have to disguise it. Why you gotta despise it? Rich and demonic, why I'm making deposits? Carry all the power, it's time to realize it.
Don't know, good thing my power.
This that nappy, this that herb, this that kinfolk, It's that skin fold. It's that war. It's that bloodline on the front line. Ready for war. Where you gonna run? Protect my grace, keep it locked in the safe. Don't make me get back to my ways. My power they never take.
Don't ever take my power.
Somebody